Hello, I'm Jason. I'm the producer of this show, and today I'm with our manager of digital media, Lydell.
Hey, how you doing, Jason?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well.
So, Lydell, how much do you know about moths?
Surprisingly, not a lot. I do like to take pictures of creepy crawlies all the time, and I can't recall ever quite getting a picture of a moth.
Well, you know, they're kind of hard to find. They're mostly only out at night, and so you'd probably need to use a lot of flash in order to capture them. But I imagine you probably know a little bit more about butterflies than you do moths. Is that right?
Oh, I got several pictures of butterflies, but don't know which ones they are.
Well, that's how a lot of people are. They're fans of butterflies because they're really pretty, but they don't know nearly as much about moths. And with all these summer nights coming up, I thought it was a great time to learn more. So I sat down with the director of the McGuire Center for Lepidoptera, Professor Akito Kawahara. Hello, Professor Kawahara. Thank you for joining me today. I'm really excited to speak with you and get into all things moths and let the people know all the great things that they do.
Yeah, moths are great. They do everything and they're spectacular.
Absolutely. So before we really get into moths, can you just tell me a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got into studying moths and Lepidoptera?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up in Japan. When I was a little kid, I used to collect insects, and like I was really interested in insects. And this is mainly because as a child of Japan, the culture there allows, you know, kids to study nature. There's a lot of interest in nature, and lots of kids study it and go outside and look for stuff. And I was in this kind of world and looking for insects and butterflies, especially. I got into butterflies, and my father took me to the American Museum of Natural History in New York when we moved to the United States. And at that point, I learned that there's a career that one can follow, studying butterflies. And so I started to work there as a volunteer in high school, and then decided that I wanted to really study this professionally. So I went to college for a degree in entomology, and it was there that I learned that there's actually a lot more than butterflies, and moths are where it's really at. So I got convinced by several scientists that I should study moths, and since then I've been primarily studying moths.
Well, I'm really glad you did, so that I could be speaking with you today. Going off of that, both moths and butterflies start as caterpillars, but butterflies really kind of steal a lot of the attention. But moths are super important too, right?
Yeah, moths are extremely important. And most people don't really think of it this way, but butterflies are actually kind of really just day-flying moths. And whenever I say this, people get upset because a lot of people love butterflies, and I agree, butterflies are wonderful too, but evolutionarily speaking, butterflies are just a group of moths, and there's about 160,000 species of butterflies and moths. And of that, only about 20,000 species are butterflies. So it's like 10% of all butterflies and moths are butterflies, and the rest, 90% or so, are what we call the true moths.
Wow. So those are huge numbers. I mean, how diverse are the species of moths? I mean, are they completely different from one another? Is there a huge spectrum from one end to the other?
Yeah, there's a huge spectrum from one end to the other. We think they're about, moths originated about 300 million years ago or so, we think. And butterflies are only about 100 million years old. I mean, I say only, but I mean, relatively speaking, they're more recent group. But some of the oldest butterflies, some of the oldest moths go back to 300 million years, and they were feeding on ferns, and they don't have the proboscis or the straw mouth part that we oftentimes think of when we think of butterflies and moths. And so these are sort of these ancient sort of fossil-like moths that are still around to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. And so a lot of people see moths and interact with moths at night. And they might not know what moths are doing at night, but they're not just hanging out. Moths do have a job, right? So what are moths doing during these nighttime hours?
Yeah, moths, just like butterflies, a lot of them are pollinating. They're coming to flowers. They have to find a mate. They're doing the things that most butterflies and a lot of other insects do as well, but it's all happening at night. And so one of the big questions is, why are they nocturnal, or why are they flying at night? And one of the reasons we think is that it has to do with daytime predation. So lots of birds, and here in Florida, we have lots of lizards and frogs and things like that. These are all predators of butterflies and moths for the most part. And so one means of getting away from them is to be active at a time when, you know, birds and visual predators like birds and you know, things like lizards are not that active, and that would be to fly at night. And so that's why we think a lot of them are active at night.
And so going off of that activity at night, I have to bring this up. When we were booking this interview, you mentioned that you were in Costa Rica studying how some moths use ultrasonic sound calls to block the sonar of bats. And that just sounded kind of like a spy thriller to me. Could you explain a little bit about what's going on there?
Yeah, it's super interesting. I mean, once I learned about this, it was like one of the things I really wanted to study for the rest of my life. And it sort of kind of engulfed my whole research program now. It's really, really interesting. And what's going on is that, the nocturnal predators that the moths have to deal with are primarily things like bats. And bats are super active at night, and they hunt, many of them hunt insects, and moths have to defend themselves against these predators. And so the moths have evolved these hearing organs. So they're basically sonar receiving devices that they have, their ears that they have, and they can hear ultrasound. They can hear the bat attack calls. And when they hear the calls, they will do certain things like fly faster or fly to the ground or change their direction or do these kinds of activities that try to get them away from the bats. Now, some moths have evolved the ability to actually counter that and communicate back to the bats. So they actually have a structure on their body that they have gained that they talk to the bats. So when they hear the bat call, they respond. And some of them will respond by telling them that they're chemically defended. And the bats recognize that sound and they say, oh, I'm not going to eat this moth because I know that this moth is distasteful. Just like a monarch butterfly is distasteful to birds, these moths are distasteful to bats. Other moths will produce a lot of ultrasound, and thereby it makes it really difficult for the bat to locate where that moth is in the sky. And this is called jamming. So the moth can jam the bat's sonar, make it really difficult for the bat to hunt and find the moth, thereby escaping the predator. And it's just super, super interesting. There's so many examples of these kinds of things. And we were just in Costa Rica and we found a new species that we think is producing ultrasound that we didn't know about. It's just extraordinary and super fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had no idea these kind of scientific defense mechanisms were kind of going into play into this, you know, super minute level where they're, you know, hearing each other's sonar calls and defending against them.
Yeah, there's actually another species, the Luna moth that we find here in Florida, which is a very big moth. It's a big sort of palish green moth that we see in the summertime here. And, you know, it was discovered that these moths have these tails because the tails actually deflect the sonar of bats. So the reason why they have these tails is actually to confuse bats. So when they fly, these moths, these tails spin. And when the bat comes and tries to attack it and eat it, it ends up biting the tail and not the body, because the tail creates this sonar acoustic sort of lure, if you will, that makes it look like a little moth flying behind a bigger moth. And the bats get fooled and they go for the tail and the moth escapes. It's super, super interesting, but that's been discovered here in Florida.
Wow, yeah, like deploying a decoy to kind of get away.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, so that's super cool. And I wanted to touch on one last thing before I let you go, Professor. I know that it's a common misconception that moths are attracted to lights, like porch lights and things like that, when in actuality, it seems that they're getting kind of confused and disoriented by these lights. Is that true? Is that the case? And is there anything that humans and people should be doing to kind of help moths and stop that from happening?
Yeah. So it is true that they are getting confused. They're trying to reorient their bodies and they're getting confused by the artificial light. And that's what causes them to be sort of drawn to the light. And oftentimes they'll end up coming to the light and sitting around the light until the morning. And oftentimes they get worn out and they get eaten by birds and other things that are in that area. So as humans, you know, what we can do is one thing to think about is turning off your light if you can. If you need to leave a light on, I would recommend changing the light bulb. You can get these bulbs that are more yellowish or kind of into the red light range, and that actually is not as strongly visible to insects, so it doesn't have as much harm. But some of the very, very powerful lights that you oftentimes see in, you know, in big like in the garages and or parking lots, and also in front of like stadiums and things like that, those lights do produce a lot of ultraviolet light, and lots of insects are attracted to them. So we do need to sort of think about what kind of lights we use, because it's making a big impact on insects, and there's a very, very strong decline of moths lately over the last 10 years or so, and we are losing them very, very quickly. So we do need to be very cautious of this and think about it. So one thing that I think is important for us to all kind of recognize and realize is that moths are actually very, very important for us as human beings. You know, not only are they pollinating plants and a lot of times our crops, but they also serve as prey to lots of different kinds of animals like birds. So the caterpillars, you know, are a really important food source for lots of birds. I mentioned, or you know, that bats feed on moths oftentimes. So the ecosystem around us really relies on these moths. But also, you know, progress in science as well. Like a lot of times, you know, we think about, you know, silk that we have for our clothing. Silk wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for moths, because there's a moth that makes the silk. And also, you know, I think we need to just stop and look at these insects, because they're actually kind of adorable. A lot of caterpillars and moths are really interesting, and they're, you know, despite what a lot of people think, they're actually extremely like not harmful. They don't actually harm you. And there's only a few species that actually can harm or give you a sting or something like this. So the majority of moths out there are not harmful to human beings, and I think there's a true beauty. Many of them are extremely interesting and beautiful, and there's so much to learn from the natural environment, and I hope that we can continue to do that and do that before we think about getting rid of them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Professor, for taking the time to speak with me. I completely agree that moths are extremely beautiful, and I not only learned a lot from you, but I feel like I'll continue to learn a lot from them, and I hope our audience does as well. So thank you again, Professor, for speaking with me.
Yep, no problem. It was a pleasure.